Great, thank you. And we're all set here. And Erica, again, thank you. Erica will be talking about the XPRIZE model for innovation through competition. As she mentioned, she is executive director of the XPRIZE Lab at MIT, the XPRIZE Foundation.
Thank you very much, Susan. As I mentioned before, this is kind of a funny fit for me in some ways because what I talk about on a day-to-day basis is competition. So we actually use this as a competition as a tool for fostering collaboration and fostering innovation. So I'm hopeful that it's useful for many of you in the room today. We're not a specific Web 2.0 tool, but we're really a broad framework for crowdsourcing and enabling communities of innovators, both pre-existing and new. So if you are from a government agency and looking at this for public prizes, if you're from a company or thinking about engaging philanthropists in doing prizes, I think this will hopefully be of interest to many different folks. So let me just go ahead and jump in and get started. I'm going to be talking here on slide two, just a quick outline. I'm going to talk to you about the XPRIZE Foundation. It's a 501c3 out in California, been around for about 13, 14 years now. Tell you about the current and future XPRIZEs that we've been designing and running. And then talk about the design of prizes and how that might be of use to you and your organization. So slide three, just the title there, again, focusing on the XPRIZE Foundation and its history. So we'll start on slide four, back in 1927. Prizes are nothing new. They've been offered for centuries. And many of you may know about the Longitude Prize and read the book by David Sobel. But perhaps one of the most famous prizes of the last century was the Ortega Prize. And Raymond Ortega was a European who moved to the U.S., started a hotel in New York City, and was very keen on seeing more travel back and forth between his hometown and his new town. He put up a $25,000 prize for the first team to fly nonstop between New York and Paris. Now, the interesting thing about this is, you know, this was not pushing the boundaries of technology at the time, per se. It was pushing the boundaries of what people were willing to try. It was a proof of concept that was needed, as was mentioned earlier with the telegraph. We needed a proof of concept to change the perception of the public about what was possible and to encourage other investment and uptake by the community. So Raymond Ortega's $25,000, we got nine teams competing, spending $400,000 collaboratively trying to win. We saw teams that were the best-known explorers of their day. Admiral Byrd, who was a noted polar explorer, actually couldn't take off from the tarmac in New York because his plane was overloaded with china and champagne for celebrating on his landing in Paris. A bit like bringing coals to Newcastle. But because of that hubris and because of someone who decided to take a more innovative and different approach, Charles Lindbergh, who was a 25-year-old, in a single-seat, single-engine aircraft, took off from New York, made it to Paris, and the rest, as they say, is history. This really was the top media story of the century. Lindbergh published a Pulitzer-winning book called The Spirit of St. Louis about his adventure, and it really did transform the public's view of aviation. In the next year, we saw, I think there's a quadrupling of the number of private pilot's licenses. We saw a 30-fold increase in the number of airline passengers in the year and a half that followed. So again, these are prizes can be a real catalyst for changing conversations about what's possible. Peter Diamandis, and I'm going to go on to slide five here, the founder of the XPRIZE Foundation, back in 1996 was reading Spirit of St. Louis and thinking about how a prize of that sort could be used to foster innovation in the space sector. He was particularly interested in human space flight. So he raised a prize purse of $10 million, challenging teams of private innovators, not government-funded, but private innovators, to enter the world of space flight. So these were three-person reusable spacecraft going to suborbital space. The XPRIZE defined that as 100 kilometers altitude. It was a nice opportunity to define a new target. Space was previously undefined. And to do two flights within 2 weeks. And all of these details in the prize design really go towards fostering the kind of innovation that the XPRIZE was looking for. Three passengers meant that this could be a business model, and this wasn't just a demonstration of one daredevil, but it was really, you know, a pilot and two paying passengers. There's a business model behind it. 100 kilometers altitude was actually originally set at 100 miles. did some calculations and realized that the thermal reentry characteristics there were going to be pushing more breakthroughs in material science than they were in the kinds of aerospace broad-based innovation they were interested in. So they brought that down, realized the American public wouldn't know the difference between 100 miles and 100 kilometers anyway, and it still fostered the same kind of opportunities. And two flights within 2 weeks meant that this was a reusable spacecraft, that the cost of a second flight was really just touch labor if we weren't totally reinventing this vehicle every time it wanted to fly. So again, supporting a back-end business model. So $10 million prize, I'm going to go on to slide six. $10 million prize, we got $100 million in spending from the teams that were competing. 26 teams from 7 different countries. The winning team down on the lower right-hand corner here, Scaled Composites. Bert Rattan is an innovator out in the Mojave Desert of California, was backed by Paul Allen, one of the founders of Microsoft. They collectively spent about $26 million trying to win the $10 million purse. And you sit there and you sort of scratch your head and you go, well, that's awfully interesting. But what we see is that this begets an entire industry. The day that Bert Rattan's spacecraft lands in Mojave, Richard Branson is standing there from the Virgin Group, buys the rights to Spaceship One and has now started Virgin Galactic. Spaceship Two is scheduled to begin flight testing later this month. There's been $1.6 billion of investment in commercial spaceflight since this prize was won about 5 years ago. So $10 million purse, $100 million invested by private teams looking to compete, begets an industry that's $1.6 billion large 5 years down the road. So that kind of leverage is something that prizes are uniquely well-suited to do. Here on slide seven, you see a great picture. Once the prize-winning flights were over and Bert Rattan had been handed his $10 million check, the National Air and Space Museum picked up Spaceship One. It's now hanging next to the Spirit of St. Louis, Charles Lindbergh's aircraft, in the Museum of Flight Milestones. So this is the most visited room in the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., most visited museum in the world, and really has become part of history. So it's pretty exciting there. So coming out of that competition, and we're on slide eight, the XPRIZE Foundation attracted quite a bit of interest from the entrepreneurship and philanthropic communities. The idea that you could not only guarantee or try to foster many times leverage on an investment in a philanthropic space, but you could only pay on winners. So this isn't a gift to the Red Cross, but this is I'm going to put up money looking for success. And that attracted a lot of interest from the philanthropic and high-tech communities. You can see that joining the board in the years that followed was a broad cross-section of really interesting folks, Larry and Sergey from Google, Dean Kamen, who invented the Segway, Eric Lindbergh, the grandson of Charles Lindbergh, Elon Musk from PayPal and SpaceX, Tesla Motors, Ratan Tata from the Tata Group in India. Really a terrific group of folks. And this group of trustees and Vision Circle members realized that prizes could be used not only in aerospace, but there was opportunities in a number of sectors. On slide nine, the XPRIZE Foundation is now working broadly in, I would say, five areas. Down in the bottom right-hand corner, exploration is still the cornerstone and history of the foundation, but looking at both space and deep sea. Right now, doing a lot of investment in the energy and environment space, and I'll be talking about some investments we've made there. Life sciences, both in terms of technology development and in terms of healthcare innovation. We can talk about that if anyone's particularly interested. And then two social sectors, global development and education, really proving harder for us to do something that we're very passionate about investing in, figuring out the right metrics for guaranteeing real meaningful change in those has proven difficult, but something that we're investing in right now and trying to look for $10 million prizes. So on the next slide, I'm going to talk to you about the current portfolio at the XPRIZE Foundation and the future prizes that are coming down the pipeline. Slide 11 shows you our three active prizes. So after the success of the Ansari XPRIZE in 2004, we launched the Archon XPRIZE for genomics, so sequencing 100 human genomes in 10 days, $10 million prize there. Followed that with a $30 million investment by Google for a lunar XPRIZE for the first private robots back on the moon. And then most recently, Progressive Automotive Insurance, a $10 million prize for cars that get 100 miles to the gallon or better in a race that's going to be happening next summer. So I'll walk you through each of those in a little bit more detail. On slide 12, you see the Archon X Prize for Genomics. This was funded by Stu and Marilyn Blusson. Stu Blusson was probably the luckiest graduate student I've ever heard of. Did his graduate work in geology, looking at how to predict the occurrence of diamond mines based on geological formations. Got an investor when he published his thesis, and now owns the largest diamond mine in North America. I wish my thesis was so lucrative. but Stu is very passionate about personalized medicine and what genomics could do in that space. So they put forward a $10 million purse to try to revolutionize or to accelerate the revolution of genomic sequencing. This is 100 human genomes fully sequenced, every single base pair, with a very high degree of accuracy, asking teams to do that in 10 days, which is an order of magnitude better than the technologies that were available at the time, and to do so for an average cost of $10,000 a genome, which represents a massive improvement of throughput relative to current technology. Importantly, and I'm going to go on to slide 13, it's very difficult to engage public's imagination around sequencing genomes. You can watch a spacecraft being launched, and it's a sight to behold. Watching genomes being sequenced is about as exciting as watching paint dry. So in order to get the level of public engagement and public excitement around this prize that the original Ansari Prize had, the XPRIZE put together what they call the Genome 100. So the 100 genomes being sequenced really put a human face on this technology prize. Out of the 100, there's about a third of the group that are big celebrities, Michael J. Fox, Stephen Hawking, about a third that are benefactors, so Sergey Brin and Larry Page at Google, and then representatives from patient groups, so working with groups like the Susan B. Komen Foundation and the Lance Armstrong Foundation, to identify patients within their communities that can represent the face of genomics and what it can do for their disease efforts. For me, this is really important. And one of my students once said, you know, no one gives a ticker tape parade to a technology. People get ticker tape parades, technologies don't. And I thought that was really insightful, because what we're ultimately trying to do is to create conversations, to change what people believe is possible, and to create enough excitement to get new rounds of investment so that we can leverage our prize purses into much greater spending and much expanded industries. For us, it's critical that we engage the public imagination. So things like this allow us to do that. On slide 14, you see a rover sitting on the surface of the moon, a nice little cartoon. Google put forward $30 million, trying to challenge the first private lunar rovers to come back to the lunar surface, broadcasting back HD video. Some details on slide 15. This $30 million purse represents a $20 million prize for first place, $5 million prize for second place, and $5 million in performance bonuses for groups that can do things like rather than roving 500 meters on the lunar surface, to row 5 kilometers, or to go and take pictures of lunar hardware, either Russian or American landed there from the 60s and 70s. It was an important thing that we learned in the Ansari X Prize was that only offering one prize purse spurred innovation for a time, but as soon as that prize purse was won, the carrot dangling out in front of the community was gone. And it was there was a lot of teams that pulled back from the public limelight and concentrated their efforts internally, rather than continuing to push the boundaries in this area. So by adding a second-place purse on the Google Lunar X Prize, we hope to see innovation that continues beyond that first landing. And by adding performance bonuses, we can also incentivize niche communities and niche innovators who speed may not be their thing, but they may have really innovative solutions that are relevant to us. On slide 16, you can see some of the teams that are already registered, 20 different teams from across the world. Of particular relevance to this group here today, there's one team known as FredNet. FredNet is completely virtual. They are doing everything via Wikipedia.
Rose Oliveira
is now exiting.
wikis and virtual collaboration tools. I encourage you to take a peek at their website if that's something that interests you. A number of the teams are distributed and working with collaborative tools of one sort or another. Here at MIT, MIT students collaborating with the Draper Lab, collaborating with local companies and other large aerospace partners around the country, sort of represents a very typical effort on this side. On slide 17, I was talking to Susan about the connection with the Department of Energy and wanted to spend a little bit more time talking about the Progressive Auto X Prize. This prize is for cars that get 100 miles to the gallon or better, really talking about a revolution in the way that we not only design but manufacture and sell automobiles. You can see more details on slide 18. But this isn't just about creating another concept car, but this is about testing cars that are marketable, that are sexy, that are interesting, that can actually enter the U.S. and European automotive markets, and they can operate it given the infrastructure that we already have. So we're not looking for hydrogen vehicles, but we are looking to revolutionize automotive technologies and to get technologies that can be uptaken in massive quantities. So cars that are made at 10,000 units a year is sort of the same. The vehicles, we started with 111 teams and have narrowed down the field over the last 6 months to 41 teams from 10 different countries, 51 different vehicles. They represent two classes of cars, mainstream cars, which are four seats, four wheels, what each of us probably has in our garage, and alternative cars with that look much more futuristic, two seats. There's both a tandem front-to-back class and a side-by-side class there. This one is sponsored entirely by Progressive Insurance, and for them it was a matter of putting themselves forward as a company that's innovative, that is dedicated to the environment. There's, I think the cynical view of this is that it's greenwashing. The more thoughtful view is that they're a company that wanted to see innovation in the space and weren't going to play in the technologies themselves. So by putting forward a prize, they could really be thought of as the sponsors of innovation. And I think that there's some value there. The competition is going to be held this coming summer in the state of Michigan, doing competitions ranging from dynamometer testing to closed track testing and really pushing the boundaries of these vehicles. I'm really looking forward to crowning a winner and handing out some large prize checks at the end of the summer. If you look on page 19, one of the interesting things that we learned from this prize is that prizes are particularly good at bringing underdogs out of the woodwork. It wasn't in GM's interest to have the Volt up against a number of small players. If they lost, they had nothing to lose but their face and their reputation. If they won, everyone would say, "Well, of course you won. You're the big gorilla in the room." But for smaller innovators, this was an opportunity to showcase technologies that they've been looking to show the world were legitimate. Many of these groups have been working for decades on the technologies at hand. Aptera Motors out on the West Coast, really a forerunner in electric commuter cars, electric down in the lower right-hand corner, basically a half a car looking to come into that small subcompact space. Tata Motors out of India looking to show the world that you can have an affordable and efficient car that can be made for developing world markets. On page 20, you see the timelines for the competition. Really kicked off this year at the Detroit Auto Show just a couple weeks ago, 41 teams with their 51 vehicles. The shakedown stage coming in April and May in Michigan, giving teams a chance to show their stuff and get to know the judging team. And then we have a set of qualifying stages throughout the summer that will be really exciting to watch. This is going to be highlighted in traditional mass media, in blogs, in YouTube videos, Twitter, you name the Web 2.0 tool, and it's probably being used, as well as more traditional outlets. So September 2010, we'll have our top three cars at an award ceremony in Washington, D.C. For those of you who are local, I encourage you to go meet these innovators. There's some really incredible teams out there. Slide 21. For us, prizes aren't only about the technologies that are created, but the excitement that is created. We've sponsored with the Department of Energy on an education program called Dash Plus. This is a national high school contest that's asking people to reinvent the dashboard, vehicle dashboard, to help drivers increase their fuel economy and their efficiency. So fuelourfuturenow.com, you can take a look at, has information and resources for students and teachers, and really is looking to use this contest as an opportunity to spur the conversations about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education, and to get young kids excited about the possibility of working in that field. Slide 22, you can see that there's been a really nice broad base of support that's come out. Again, prizes and the nature of competition, there's something inherent in the human nature, I think, about being engaged in competition. The support of folks like former Vice President Al Gore, Jay Leno, Arnold Schwarzenegger, has really been able to raise the profile of this prize, to invite investors to come in and join us and to support the team. And I think it gives a degree of legitimacy to something that has historically been a garage hobby. And we see that over and over again with well-structured prizes, that you can take an area that's been considered fringe and you can give it legitimacy by offering a large enough prize and backing that with the right kind of support. So for those of you who are looking at ways to change a conversation around your agency or in your area of innovation and say, no, let's not talk about if this can be done, but when it will be done, prizes offer a great opportunity for doing that. On slide 23, you can see some of the media coverage that's been coming to this, already hundreds of thousands of media hits, even just leading up to these events. We're really looking forward to the summer. Slide 24, back on slide 23, I think that the engagement of both traditional and non-traditional media has allowed us to reach out to a wide variety of audiences. For X Prizes that are technology-oriented, obviously it's natural for us to have collaborations with groups like Wired Magazine and the sort of tech community. The exposure that we've gotten on today's show has been terrific in raising the awareness around the educational opportunities here. And I think that hitting that full spectrum is something that Prizes have done traditionally well. On slide 24...
Rosa Oliveira
is now exiting.
You can see a few of the prizes that we currently have in development. For us, it takes about a year from start to finish to fully develop a prize, to turn all the dials so that we know that it's 100 kilometers and not 100 miles, to get all the public relations work in place, and then to do the fundraising for the prize first. So three areas that we're investing heavily in right now: ocean exploration, looking at deep sea races, basically turning the Ansari X Prize upside down and seeing what would happen if you went down instead of up. In the area of bionics, looking at this as a way to foster innovation in the spinal cord injury space. We've been looking at a prize that would be next-generation exoskeletons, helping paraplegics to climb Mount Fuji. And then rapid TB detection, this is actually a prize design that came out of students here at MIT working with the Gates Foundation to look at ways that we can do TB diagnostics that are appropriate for the developing world. Right now we have a great pipeline of patients coming into clinics, actually a surprisingly good pipeline of drugs that can cure tuberculosis, but we're using techniques that are 100 years old and having very poor luck in diagnosis. So working with Gates Foundation on how we can change that equation. On slide 25, you see some things that are a bit further out for us, but that we're no less excited about, looking at carbon capture and sequestration, brain-computer interfaces. We just ran a two-day workshop a couple of weeks ago with Ray Kurzweil and Singularity University, looking at brain-computer interfaces for control of computers, for control of prostheses, for next-generation visual prosthetics, and talking as far out into the future as what's the first step towards an avatar prize, and what might that look like? The AI physician is a concept we've been working with in the global development space, thinking about how you could use handhelds and portable technologies to support clinicians and medical providers out in the field. Can you be as accurate as a doctor using a PDA to help diagnose a patient in rural Africa? Slide 26. clean water really pairs with our exploration in the deep sea space, thinking about quite a bit these days about how you would clean the plastics out of the Pacific Ocean, as well as how you would offer clean drinking water in the developing world. So looking at two different development streams there. Education for us, the big bugaboo here is figuring out what the right thing is to measure. Again, happy to talk about that in the Q&A session. And then in the space of energy, we've been looking a lot, particularly recently, in this area of energy storage and how can we use Apprise to revolutionize next generation storage technology. So that's just a snapshot of what the XPRIZE is doing. Slide 27. The next section I'm going to talk about how to design prizes and what's the philosophy and the structure that goes behind this. How might you be able to replicate a process like this in your own organization, and what are some of the lessons that we've learned? Slide 28 lays out the prize world on a single axis and breaks this into traditional past-looking awards, so retrospective prizes like the Nobel. This acknowledges something that happened years ago. It gets you some media buzz, but it's not really fostering new innovation in a targeted way. But these kinds of prizes are terrific for raising awareness and for highlighting a past accomplishment. At the XPRIZE Foundation, we're really more focused on future-focused incentives, so inducement prizes, and this includes things like the Ortega Prize, the one by Charles Lindbergh, the DARPA Grand Challenge, the XPRIZE models, the Centennial Challenges at NASA. Again, trying to change the conversation from can it be done to when will it be done. For us, it's important that these prizes define a problem and not a solution. So we're always looking for solution-independent prize statements. So not design a hybrid electric vehicle that has these characteristics. It's not letting out a contract or a grant, but to say design a vehicle that gets high fuel economy and low emissions. How you get there is up to you. Allows us to really tap into a wealth of innovators. On slide 29, you see some of the advantages of these large incentive competitions and the hallmarks. Again, we've talked about the leverage. You donate to a nonprofit and you're getting a one-for-one for your money. You offer a matching gift and you're getting two-for-one. You sponsor a prize, and as a company, a philanthropist, or a government, you can be looking at 10 times, 50 times, 100 times leverage on your investment by attracting outside investors to the challenge that you're raising. In efficiency, this is really a pay-for-performance tool. So again, in the vein that a contract is, here you are paying for outcomes. If people try and do it and fail, they're not paying for it. Unlike traditional scientific grants, this is not trying to bet on the right team, but rather to bet on a field of innovators and pay out on the success of the winner. And encouraging industry development, again, by setting out a solution-neutral prize statement, you can really bet on an entire field and to give rise to many solutions that can then enter and form a new industry or form a new approach to problems. Slide 30, I used to think this was going to be easy. I thought that the development of a prize was a simple matter. It turns out that it's much more challenging than I ever imagined because you're really looking for an intersection. You're looking for market conditions that are right for a prize. To put a prize, let's say, in solar photovoltaics where the venture capital community has been investing hundreds of million dollars, a $10 million prize isn't going to get you very far. So we're looking for market conditions where the kinds of resources that we have can make a real difference. You're looking for a prize that has clear metrics for success. Again, the challenge in the education space, the challenge with many traditional prizes to say, I'll know good work when I see it. We're looking to say, here is this very well-defined finish line and to be able to metric that. Something that can create public interest, and you can be creative about that. Again, watching genomes being sequenced is not much fun, but having the human stories of 100 people to talk about is much more compelling. Finding things that are technically feasible. The XPRIZE Foundation really focuses on a 3 to 8 year technology horizon. Anything that's won in less than 3 years probably wasn't worth $10 million in our minds. Anything that takes more than 8 years is hard for us to maintain that public energy around. And then the resource availability. We look at prizes that are $10 million, $10 to $30 million, which means that we expect a winning team to be spending somewhere, you know, on an order of magnitude between $1 million and $100 million in the development cycle and innovation. So that does definitely constrain what we can challenge the world to do. Slide 31, some promising targets. So I was talking about finding the right market conditions. One area that we found is places where capital doesn't flow because markets are inefficient or blocked or dominated by monopolies. The investment of the Ansari Prize in commercial spaceflight said this doesn't have to be done by governments. NASA is not the only game in town for getting to space. And it allowed capital to come into the private sector. Places where you need a technology demonstration, a proof of concept to change perception. So again, when we were talking earlier about the demonstration of the telegraph, prior to that demonstration, the investment community wasn't willing to take the risk. But once that proof of concept had been achieved, then it changed the calculus. I encouraged other investments to rapidly flow into that space. And again, we see the same thing with the Ansari X Prize for commercial space flight. We've been thinking a lot recently about targets that are behavioral. Can you have a behavioral prize? We're not looking, though, for the biggest loser. Things that are flash in the pan are not a good investment for us. But if you can think about behavioral modification prizes that induce lasting effects, we think that these can be much more successful. So if you had an energy efficiency prize that encouraged people to install programmable thermostats, even if their basic behaviors change, revert back to what they were at the end of the day, you've got those infrastructural elements installed. Also, if you can induce policy changes, so if the spread of energy storage devices can induce time-of-use pricing in utilities around the grid, then we have something that's a change that lasts beyond the flash in the pan of the behavioral prize. And last but not least, futuristic technologies. So anything that we want to change that conversation, again, from can it be done to when will it be done, we talk about prizes that are pushing the boundaries of credibility in terms of what's science fiction and what's science reality. But if we can get a group of experts together that say, no, you know, I think that with the current technology trends, this is feasible. If we can get someone to lay down $10 million and put their money on the line to bet that is indeed a feasible approach, then suddenly it changes the conversation and it gives a legitimacy to the technology that we are seeking. On slide 32, you see that we think about this quite a bit in terms of the S-curve model of technology development. So here you see technology performance as a function of the amount of effort being put in. And traditionally, you have very early in an S-curve lots of different approaches that are being taken, but not a whole lot of improvement in performance until you reach a dominant design. And really, at that inflection point on the S-curve, you see this rapid uptake and ability of technologies to accelerate exponentially. We've seen this with Moore's Law and the ability of processing speed on computers to really accelerate. At some point, you reach a fundamental limit on a given technology pathway, and that tapers off, and you have a need to shift to a new S-curve. Prizes are not really well-suited to that exponential growth phase. It doesn't do us any good to try to accelerate Moore's Law when that acceleration is already there. But to think about technologies that can get us from early proofs of concept towards the dominant design and accelerate that uptake, or they can shift us from an old technology to a new technology and see a technology that is tapering off on its ability to perform, shifting to a new S-curve. It gives us more room to grow. Prizes are really good in both of those spaces. On slide 33, there's a great book called Crossing the Chasm that looks at technology diffusion and says that between early adopters and the majority of users, there's a gap. That they call the chasm, and crossing that chasm is really taking us from the gadget of today to something that people believe is credibly usable and helpful in their day-to-day lives. I think we've seen this with plenty of technologies. Prizes are great at showing the world that a early-stage technology can be uptaken by the masses, so thinking about opportunities in that space is very efficient as well. slide 34, a few design principles that I've hit on, but just sort of wanted to re-highlight for you at the end of this presentation. A solution-independent problem statement really helps you to get diverse competitors and approaches. Clear and measurable outcomes gives you a clear winner and a very clear target for development, focusing development efforts on what you're most interested in. Having a finite period of competition is important for maintaining public energy. A large prize purse attracts PR and encourages competitive investment in the space, and the integrated media campaigns that I've been talking about provide incentives above and beyond the prize purse. And just to highlight a little bit more on that last point, slide 35 shows what I call Prize Economics 101. So the Ortega Prize, $25,000 prize purse, the total invested by those teams was $400,000. And sorry, X Prize, $10 million prize purse, $100 million invested by the team. The North American Solar Car Challenge, college teams building solar vehicles, no purse at all, just the rights to be the winner, $300,000 cost for the event. The team spent $12.3 million, a factor of 40 leverage, trying to win that prize. Why do they do it? Slide 36, you see something that we call incentive stacking. And basically, in order for teams, for investors to come and invest in a space, particularly an innovative one, you're going to have some sort of risk-reward threshold. And you're going to have to stack up the incentives until they feel like the rewards are above the risk. So you've got your traditional market incentives and policy incentives that are in place. And in some areas, there's just a gap. So how do you bridge that gap? Prizes are one way of doing that. And for us, the important thing is that prize is not just about the purse. It's not for Paul Allen to spend $26 million in trying to win a $10 million prize purse. It just doesn't make sense. But he knew that the market commitments that came with it, a huge amount of media attention, 5.5 billion media impressions for the Ansari X Prize, the glory and prestige, the thrill of victory, these things all add up to be worth much more than the prize purse alone. So getting towards the end of the presentation here, slide 37, there's a number of ways that we incentivize innovation in the federal government, in companies around the world. We have grants, we have tax relief, we have subsidies, intellectual property, traditional financing. For me, prizes are really an element of this portfolio. Peter Diamandis, the founder of the XPRIZE Foundation, talks to philanthropists about this being about 10% of their investment portfolio. It's really an effective tool. The Department of Energy, NASA with its Centennial Challenge Program, a number of other federal agencies, DARPA, looking at this as a complement to other tools for incentivizing innovation. Not replacing, but as a complement. And I think for me, slide 38 really sums up why a prize is so effective. And this is a quote that's painted on the wall at XPRIZE headquarters out in California. It says, "In these great challenges, the victors may claim the glory, but the world will claim the spoils." Unlike a traditional grant or contract, you're not paying out for one team. You're not betting on the winner in advance. You're saying, here's a challenge I need solved. I'm willing to invest in it, and if the world can come to my doorstep, I will reward the winner handsomely. And I think that the field of innovation that you see coming out of prizes is really, really quite effective. So I'll end there on slide 39, and I'm happy to take some questions.
Sure. Please join me in thanking Eric for his presentation.